Okay, thank you, Victor. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation and also for all the excellent talks. Okay, and in particular, those talks really helped me. I don't have to explain much about 2D physics. All right, so this, I'm supposed to talk about lattice. If you, I was invited a few months earlier, I would talk about lattice. Okay, but it turns out in the during the whole summer, we pretty much just turn off the lattice laser because we just found that after we see the Mach insulator and so on, we don't quite understand the superfluid. Okay, and the superfluid in our case is 2D gas. And we spend quite some time to do some investigation and figure out how exactly understand the system. Okay, and it took a different point of view. And what we found is that turns out the 2D gas, this weak entangling 2D gas, okay, has similar type of symmetry as a strongly entangling Fermi gas in 3D. Okay, how would that be the case? I'll try to explain. All right, so the kind of scaling symmetry I'm talking about is the following. Okay, like a fractal, if you zoom in, then it looks identical. Now, so I'm talking about 2D gas with a constant contact interaction, and compare that to 3D gas, a resonant interaction. If you look at a Hamiltonian, okay, that assume you are in the perfect 2D world, and Hamiltonian will come in the cold gas, the dilute gas, we have P squared over 2m, the kinetic energy, and also the contact interaction. Okay, and for now, let's assume G is a constant. Okay, and if you try to scale out your sample by a factor of lambda, okay, then you can see the kinetic energy goes down by a factor of lambda squared. Okay. And then this interaction energy, okay, G multiplied by N, also goes down by lambda, by a factor of lambda squared. Okay. I put a star here. Later I'll show you the G prime might not be the same as G. Okay. But in any case, I'm talking about this first term kinetic energy, the second term interaction energy. As long as the coupling constant is a constant, okay, then you have the following scaling symmetry. Okay. When you scale up your wave function by lambda, then the total energy reduced by lambda squared. And how is this the same as a 3D Fermi gas with resonant interaction? Then let's look at the Hamiltonian again. All right, so we had the interaction kinetic energy as well as the interaction energy. When scattering approaches plus minus infinity, then we know G will no longer be proportional to scattering length, but we're proportional to 1 over the wave number, okay, one over Q, okay. So in this case, kinetic energy is the same thing. If you look at interaction energy, now this is a delta function. This should be third, okay. In 3D, the delta to the third power, okay. Three-dimensional delta function. So scale is 1 over lambda to the third power, and then the coupling constant 1 over Q scales at lambda. So again, the interaction energy scales at 1 over lambda squared, okay. So that is the similarity we found out, okay. And then we follow on this recent progress. For example, Chris Solomon talked about the universal thermodynamics. We realize that is the reason you can do the universal thermodynamics is because of this this hidden scaling symmetry here. So the basic consequences is that any observable, okay, based on this Hamiltonian, we have the following scaling law. Okay, I don't need to know what's the state of the system. Okay, and for example, equation of state can be written this way. Okay, and only the ratio of the length scales, okay, would matter. So for example, if you look at equation of state in grain canonical example, it should depend on both chemical potential and temperature. Okay, but once you have this kind of symmetry, only the ratio matters. Okay. And then another consequence of this is that when you want to determine, for example, the thermodynamics, okay, you can look at, for example, the grain potential. Once grain potential is known, then it knows everything. In general, grain potential cannot be directly measured, but you can look at this differential equation. Okay, if you can determine entropy, also determine the equation of state, then it knows everything. This is a two-variable partial differential equation. Even you measure this N and S, okay, this is not guaranteed that you can find a solution. However, Now we know only the ratio matters, so you can rewrite it. Okay, now it becomes a ordinary differential equation. Omega is a function of mu tilde, which is a ratio of mu to kT. Okay, I also rewrite the density in a kind of dimensionless fashion. Okay, n tilde is a pretty much the phase back density in 2D. So once you know n, you do some integration, then that's it. Okay, so you can determine the you can determine the force thermodynamics. All right. Okay, but there is one small problem. Okay, one small problem. That is when we try to compare the 2D system to 3D gas. In our experiment, we don't really have a pure 2D. We're not living in a pure 2D world. Okay, so how are we really sure that when we prepare this 2D gas with a strong confinement in the z direction, for example, okay, the system can be described by this kind of pure 2D Hamiltonian. Okay, so the question will be the validity of this kind of pure 2D model, and whether this 2D coupling constant is really a constant. If that's really a constant, then we're done. Okay. Fortunately, Petro, Shyamnikov, they have Holtzman and Shyamnikov, they thought about this problem already 10 years ago. Okay. So they consider the following limit. As long as your 3D scatterness is small compared to the offset length, the z direction, and also you are in the Schroeder interaction, you are in a dilute gas regime, interaction range is small compared to interparticle separation. Okay, and in the z direction, you are only limited to only one mode, meaning kT and mu are both small compared to confinement z direction. Okay, then the degree of freedom in z direction frozen, then they can match a boundary condition. Okay, the short range and the long range boundary condition, and determine the interaction. There's an effective interaction G, okay, multiplied by N and the 2D density, and this effective interaction can be written in the following form. Okay, all right. So what do we have here? We have the density, we have the scatterness, this is 3D scatterness. Okay, these are all the regular kind of thing. Okay, the only complication coming from this logarithmic term. Okay, if this term is important, so you start to carry this the dependence on the momentum Q. Okay, then the scale invariance will break down. Okay, but if you can go to this this quasi 2D regime, okay. In our case, for the experiment I'm going to show you, we can control this parameter to be less than 0.02. Okay, then the effective coupling constant will be a constant. Okay, and also depends on just A over LZ. That's a harmonic length in Z direction. So to satisfy this criterion, what we do is that we use a phase bar resonance, in this case, to make scatterness small. Okay, and we dilute gas. Okay, and we also need to engineer our trap such that the confinement Z direction really much larger than KT, which I'll show you. Also chemical potential to be small compared to H bar omega z. Okay, but in a broader sense, what really triggers to think about, to study this, okay, there's another motivation for us to understand the universal behavior, okay. In a general system, well, in the 2D system, we have been fascinated by this phase diagram provided by Subir Sachdev, okay, regarding this the quantum phase transition. Okay, so here what I'm showing you is that in the 2D gas far on the left side, there's a BKT transition, the phase transition from normal gas to superfluid. If you go all the way to the other side, when the light is getting stronger and stronger, the critical temperature eventually go down to zero. There's a critical behavior here, and that's the so-called quantum critical regime. And what we study in 2D gas can be connected to the quantum critical regime. Okay, near this critical point, and this transition driven by thermal excitation is called classical critical regime. That transition driven by other parameters, so you call quantum critical regime. How these regimes can really connect to each other? Okay, they have different universality class and so on. Okay, all right. So we decided to first try to understand 2D gas in the absence of lattice, and then try to. Then our next goal would be moving toward the quantum critical regime. All right, so I'll be talking about how we prepare 2D gas and how do we do the in situ imaging And because of the limitation of time, I'll be mostly talking about this, how we identify these universal scaling laws, okay, of the 2D gas and the references here. Okay, so I think this Stephen talked about the very impressive in situ imaging, and tomorrow we also have Marcus Gwender talking about this their in situ imaging. So I'll just quickly summarize our approach. Okay, we're using a commercial microscope objective. Okay, and looking at our sample. Our sample is loaded into the two XY plane. And the confinement in Z direction is provided by these two blue beams. Okay, and in the horizontal direction, okay, we can switch between the trap geometry to the lattice geometry. Okay, by changing the number of beams we illuminating the atoms. So if you have two beams, then that will be our 2D trap. If you turn on the retro refraction, okay, then we can convert the 2D trap, okay, into the 2D lattice. Okay, and we were pretty hard try to make the confinement in Z direction strong, and eventually the best result we have, okay, is the following. Our temperature is about 15 times the trap frequency, the horizontal direction. And it's a small fraction of the confinement in Z direction. So this shows us that the population in the excited state in the Z direction is very, very small, okay, exponential to the power minus 7. Okay. All right, and we do our imaging using the resonant beam, doing absorption imaging, and looking at the shadow cast by the atoms. Okay, and here are the reference, and now there are also other group from Harvard and this MPQ also doing this in situ imaging of many body system. Okay, so this is a typical image of our system. Okay, we load about 10 to 4, 1 to 2 times 10 to 4 atom into our lattice. Okay, and our resolution is not as good, not good enough for to see lattice site. Okay, however, there's a lot of information as you can see from this from the image. From this image, you can determine the density, but this is the average image, as I mentioned. Okay, from single shot, we can see the fluctuation. Okay, so there are two observable in our experiment. Every density and fluctuation. Okay, and I need to mention about this a little bit more about the in situ imaging. Okay, so as you might have already learned, okay, in situ imaging in the lattice can have some problem because of radio collision loss. So when you have two atoms in one side, okay, the confinement is so strong, the local density is so high, such that the it's easy to see the loss. Okay, so in our case, since we don't have our resolution limited to 1.5 micron anyway, okay, so we decided to do the following. Okay, in order to avoid this kind of loss, okay, we first quickly right before the imaging, we quickly render scattering to zero to reduce the scattering process as much as possible. Second, okay, we do a short time of fry, which allow this atom to fry apart, okay, and by doing the experiment, we can tell when we allow particle to expand, okay, then our measurement, okay, eventually will agree with the model. For example, we can prepare thermal gas, and we can recover the Gaussian distribution in the harmonic potential, okay. So eventually we found out with a 50 microsecond, which allow particle to expand to about 1 to 2 micron. Okay, then we are free from this radio collision loss problem. Okay, so this is how we can show we can see one layer of plateau and also start to see a second, the building out of the particle above n equal to one. Okay, another thing we see in this study is that we see a very slow mass transport. Okay, and for example, if it renders lattice from 0 to 10 recoil energy, then we see immediately after the REM, okay, we see this density profile, okay, and if you wait for a long time, then eventually the system equilibrate will approach the gray profile. So with a different hold time, we can see the density approaching the equilibration, but it takes a very long time, okay, and so when we measure the equilibration time as a function of lattice depth. Okay, we found that when we go to a stronger and stronger lattice, two things happen. When the tunneling is being turned down, the sequence interaction goes up. So since we see a longer equilibration time, it seems to suggest it's coming from the tunneling. We're limited by the tunneling. Okay. So if I plot the tunneling multiplied by 100, so it's bring the data closer. Okay, we can see it goes pretty much, it looks like it's determined by tunneling. And when the system goes into mild incident phase, it becomes even slower. Okay. All right. Okay, so that's the end of my part on the lattice. Now I'll go back to 2D gas. Okay. So as Doran already gave a very impressive and detailed discussion. Okay, I'm not going to talk to you too much about the 2D physics here. Okay. All I want to say is that there have been a lot of work, a lot of impressive work in this field, trying to understand, for example, the vortex correlation and also the existence of fluctuation regime. Okay, and also Han Crystal talk about 2D gas with a very large scattering length and so on. Okay, but our interest is more into the equational state and also whether there are these universal behaviors. Okay, so. Here, so our approach is the following. We can change the temperature, we can change the interaction strength. Then we just measure the density under all possible configuration we can access. Different temperature, different interaction strength, okay? And we can also determine the chemical potential of the system. And then there are totally four predictions, okay? In principle, there's a global scale invariant due to symmetry I told you about earlier. So with the two measurable, two observable we have, density fluctuation, okay, expected, okay, the major value, okay, in a dimensionless form should be proportional to mu over kT, okay, so these are two predictions. And the other two is more about the critical behavior. When you are sufficiently close to a phase transition point, okay, any deviation of your observable away from the critical point, in principle, should have a certain kind of universal scaling law. Okay, in particular, okay, Boris Svitunov and Nikolai, what's this? Pokovev. Okay, yes, thanks. Okay, they have shown that they have tabulated. Okay, the prediction based on Monte Carlo calculation. So we can measure our density. I'll tell you in a little bit how do we determine the critical density and critical chemical potential, and then we can verify this, the other two universal scaling law. All right. So as I mentioned, so our observable is density and the fluctuation. From the density measurement, performed at different temperature, here I'm showing you the radially average density profile. Okay. We can use a tail. Okay. And feed the tail to the theoretical prediction for the weak interacting gas, okay, right? So we choose a tail with a phase space density below one, okay, and we show that, and by feeding the tail and also with the local density approximation, okay, we can determine the both the chemical potential and the kT, okay, and both determine both parameters, okay. A similar thing has already been done in the Chris Hans group, okay, to determine the universal thermodynamics. Okay, all right, and then once we know the chemical potential and temperature, so we can show our result as a function of the ratio, okay, mu tilt, which is just a chemical potential over kT, okay, and as you can see in the inset, these are our raw data. I show you the density, the average density. A different temperature. For example, lower temperature, you see the black one and the red one are here. Very high temperature, this the magenta one, pretty much just a thermal gas. Okay, and we show if you scale the both density and chemical potential in the proper way. In this case, in terms of phase space density versus the mu over kT, then all the measurements just collapse into one single curve. Okay, so that's that verifies this law. Okay, but I need to mention because of the way we determine chemical potential and the temperature using this kind of ideal gas result. Okay, so it's not surprising they overlap in the normal gas regime. That's by definition. We determine mu and kT from here, and this ideal gas formula itself is also scale invariant. Okay, so the interesting part should be here. Okay, when chemical potential goes above zero and eventually into the superfluid regime. So after we submitted the paper, actually Boris and Nikolai did some email communication. They told me that we understand there's a much better fit to understand the behavior of the system in superfluid regime. So you can see we were using only this simple formula. That's a density proportional chemical potential. That's what we learned from CDBEC. This growth PTS equation. All right. However, they have a better mean field formula for us. Okay. So now we use a new formula. This is a result. It turns out it fit much better. Okay. Fit much better. And from the prediction, here is a critical point. Okay. Here's a BKT transition point. Okay. So it's amazing that this classical field theory, okay, reproduce the whole curve all the way to the BKT transition. Okay. So only in the so-called fluctuation region with RC deviation, okay, deviation from the mean field theory. Okay. All right. Now the second observable is a fluctuation. Okay. So after taking some images, we can evaluate the standard deviation of fluctuation from the mean value. Okay. Then, so here's a result. Okay. The raw data is that you see the fluctuation. The density fluctuation as a function of the radius. Okay, I think I should have another one with the temperature. Sorry. Okay, this is for a different temperature again, from about 20 nanokelvin to 60 nanokelvin. Okay, and then with the proper rescaling, again we show all the fluctuation collapse to one curve. Okay, so here I'd like to mention, in the mean field result is provided by this dotted line. Okay. Again, it works quite well even into the fluctuation regime. And in the superfluid regime, okay, we didn't put in any theory prediction because we saw this is not available. But later, Nikolai and Boris, they told me, okay, they do have a prediction, but we just had to dig deeper, okay, into their paper. But what we show in the paper is the following. We show that the fluctuation seem to saturate. At least in this dimensionless unit, fluctuation saturate to some value here, okay. And also a recent preprint on archive, okay, also suggests that they also observe the same thing. And then based on the momentum space measurement, okay, they can identify this transitional behavior from this exponential growth into the constant regime can be used as a way to determine the position of the critical point. All right, so far I've shown you just the density of fluctuation when we fix the coupling strength and then vary the chemical potential and temperature. Now, if you repeat the measurement, try to do the same thing for different interaction strength. Okay, we got our BEC at 200 bore, then we used a phase bar resin to make the scatteredness smaller and smaller. So overall, we have a fatal five dynamic range in terms of the coupling constant. Okay, so you can see this is the result. Okay. It looks unlikely there's any way we can bring all the curves together. We cannot collapse, okay, all the curves together in this plot. However, that's where the second scaling law comes in. Okay. If we offset the density and the chemical potential, okay, by the critical value, okay, then it is possible to overlap all the curves. So here in the inset, I show you again, this is pretty much a raw data without this rescaling, okay, N tilde versus mu tilde. For different interaction strength from 0.05 all the way to 0.26. Okay. Now, if you just divide mu by g and then offset the density and chemical potential, it turns out they can overlap. Okay. They can overlap. Okay. And before I go into the detail how we determine mu c and nc, I just show you the result. Now, we found we can overlap them, and also the result agree very well with Monte Carlo calculation. Okay. One is from Boris and Nikolai. The other one, this Holtzman and Klaus. Okay. So, but now you should ask, how do we determine NC and mu C? Okay. So we have two ways. One is that we'd like to be model independent. We just blindly overlap this curve and try to find the best way okay, to minimize the deviation. Okay. By using that method, okay, we determine the NC and mu z with, I think, with square, okay, red square. Another method, we can use a crossover behavior of the fluctuation. Okay. Using crossover behavior of the fluctuation, then there's another way. Then we also determine NC and mu z in a second way. Then we show the black points, the black points. Okay. And now we, so the side product of this fit is that we can determine NC and mu z for different interaction strengths. So we can compare that to the prediction. Okay. All right. So the prediction is the following. NC pretty much almost like a constant, okay, over the range we explored, okay, because G is inside the log. But the mu c, the chemical potential, the critical chemical potential for you to see a superfluid, okay, suppose it's a scale as just proportional to the coupling constant, okay. And although it looks like a pretty good agreement, but I'm not going to show you. Well, we couldn't really determine these two constants to high precision. Okay. All right. So, but overall, the tendencies seem to agree. Okay. Okay. So this is the universal behavior of the system near the critical point. So I'd like to emphasize, this agreement is only expected. Okay, when mu only expected near the critical point, near zero. Okay, so this is the third scaling law. The fourth one should involve the fluctuation. Okay, so we try blindly. If we just try to introduce a fluctuation in a similar way, it turns out it couldn't work. Okay, so we struggle a little bit. Then we found that we do need to. Re-harder into Boris' paper, okay, and then we found that there is the fourth equation is the following. Now we can evaluate the so-called quasi-condensate density, which is a function of both density and the fluctuation, okay, and there is a meaning of this quasi-condensate density, which pretty much just tells you the non-normal component of the system, okay. You have the normal gas. And once the chemical potential is high enough, you start to have a quasi-condensate fraction, which is insufficient to lead to the superfluidity, okay, but has a kind of sizable correlation length, such that it's not normal. It's a different from the normal gas. All right, so this quantity will be zero in the normal gas regime when chemical potential is large and negative. Okay, but for larger and larger chemical potential, now we start to see deviation from zero, okay, from zero, and eventually, okay, it become pretty high. And expected, eventually, this quasi-condensate density should approach the superfluid density. So in any case, so we evaluate this according to the formula and try to plot the expansion of this, try to put all the data together. Okay, so again, they overlap. Okay, amazingly, they overlap. And I also show you the theoretical predictions. Okay, the open circle is from the classical quantum Monte Carlo, classical Monte Carlo calculation, the open circle. And there are only two points here, this one and that one, open square coming from quantum Monte Carlo. Okay, if you wish to know more about the quasi-condensate density, here are the differences. All right, so with all these universal functions, okay, we're kind of thinking about what can we do? Is anything else we can explore with this universal function? So the only one thing we came up with is the following. If you try to plot a fluctuation versus compressibility, where is it defined this way? Compressibility is just just a derivative of the equation of state relative to, of the density relative to chemical potential. Okay, so we're plotting one universal function versus the derivative of the other universal function. And what do we expect? A classical fluctuating dissipation theorem shows that these two variables should be proportional to each other in the thermal gas regime. But when you go into the quantum gas regime, what happens is, okay, thanks to the paper from Chizhou and Jason, it shows that this quantity would depend on two, would be given in this kind of expression. I put it in a dimensionless form. Okay. So here you can see the fluctuation at position r multiplied by fluctuation per position r plus r prime. Okay, so this is autocorrelation. Okay, autocorrelation that's given by the first term. But there will also be the this off-diagonal correlation. Okay, off-diagonal correlation between r and r prime, r and r plus r prime. Okay, so we can express the second term. Okay, in the units of the autocorrelation. So this z shows the strength of the correlation relative to the fluctuation. Okay, all right. So by having this kind of model in mind, so we can understand our data this way. In the normal gas, these two track each other. That's because there's a very the correlation is pretty much zero in normal gas. When you go to higher and higher phase space density, when you enter the fluctuation regime, eventually go into a superfluid regime, we start to see deviation. Okay, and you have deviation because the correlation is now significant. Okay, correlation now significant. Now we see eventually it looks like z approaches two. Okay, but we cannot exclude the possibility eventually z can be even larger. All right, so now I'd like to conclude. I hope I show you that this intuitive imaging helps us to do a lot of interesting things. And at the moment, we are exploring this universal scaling behavior. Okay, based on the universal function, hopefully there are more interesting things we can discover. Okay, and in particular, we don't have a good model now to understand the fluctuation, the relationship between fluctuation and FDT. Okay. And our next step is trying to see if when we introduce the lattice, how do we see the behavior of the classical criticality and connecting to quantum criticality. And we also have a new experiment we'd like to extend our system to include fermions. Okay, with this, finally I'd like to thank my group members, okay, and two graduate students, Chen Long mostly, most of the work on the 2D gas data, and also another graduate student, Sibo Zhang, and working on this project. And the postdoc is now in the audience has moved to Penn State. Okay, when the second project, okay, the one student working on it, and the new postdoc also working on the second project. By the way, we're also trying to improve our imaging. Okay, it's certain. Under certain conditions, we can do the deconvolution quite well. Okay. All right, with this, thank you for attention.
I have two questions. So
sure.
One is the determination of mu and t.
Yes.
So okay. How good is the zeroth order expansion, so the ideal gas that you use, and if you would use kind of a second order expansion, and how what? Can you improve even on the agreement? Because it's all crucial determining mu and t correctly. So
that's
the ideal
right.
gas formula that you're using.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
we know
right.
in the lattice it does not work very well at all.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But maybe here in the weakly interacting 2D system it's better as well.
Right. So firstly, we interacting in the class in the, once in the lattice the system will enter the critical regime much quicker much faster. Okay. And we do include the mean field leading all the mean field into our fit formula. Okay, because we know g, okay. So, and if I remember correctly, we've been very conservative, okay. We do not take, we only take the tail, okay.
Did you check the next order? I mean, if you take the next order and fit what you get for t and mu, I guess that would be the most, if you get the same values, I guess you're fine.
Okay.
And
if you we haven't tried that, okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The second question, maybe if I can just then, Victor allows me. Can you go back to the last, this nice compressibility versus
sure.
fluctuations formula? So just to make sure I understood correctly, so what you're saying, basically what you see when you see this departure from the slope is that you
yes.
see basically now that these non-local density fluctuations are playing a role.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
in the kind of high temperature regime, it's just short range density
yes.
fluctuations.
Yes.
And then it's like the compressibility is linked to the on-site fluctuations only. And
that's
when
right.
you are
mm-hmm.
getting more in the degenerate regime, you're seeing more,
that's
more
right. okay.
non-local density correlation.
Right. Okay.
That's the.
But
central
I have level. One thing is that so this is based on the belief this FDT will work, okay. And I constantly be contacted by people talking about there also be quantum contribution, quantum fluctuation, okay. Probably So there could be other correction that we need to include it, that should be included. Once it's a quantum fluctuation, then you cannot. Okay. Right, different. If you look at this, at zero temperature, okay, then the compatibility, well, the fluctuation should go to zero, but in reality, you will not. Okay, right.
Hey.
Yes, all right.
So I have one comment and three quick questions.
Yes.
The comment is this is awesome data. And the three quick questions are, I'm probably missing something basic, I'm supposed to know about this, mm-hmm. but if this is compressibility versus fluctuations, why is Z not equal to 1?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
okay.
sort of my...
Because quite yes. plotting is an auto-correlation, okay? When you look at on-site fluctuation,
yes.
okay? But FDT should include both the on-site as well as the off-diagonal, the really off-diagonal correlation.
Okay.
Yeah.
My second question is maybe also for Nikolai, is it 0.26 I think is damn close to the border validity of these Monte Carlo results. So do we expect to see some deviations there? I mean, I think around 0.3 or so, we get the prediction that the quasi-quantity density is larger than the total density. So it cannot work anymore.
Okay.
And let me tell you the last question as well, then you can answer both.
Okay.
On that one. Yes. Okay. So around 10 to the minus 1 J tilde?
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is just what does this scale mean? Because I thought the critical density would be around 8, the superfluid is 4, and the quasi-quantity is around 7. So I expect the quasi-quantity density to be sort of 1.7 times bigger than mm-hmm. the superfluid.
Right.
So my question is just for how it scaled, I guess.
Well, I can only tell you what we see. Around 0, it looks like maybe, I don't know, 6 or 6.5 or something. Right. So, and the. So the ratio looks like it's not as large as 1.7, but okay.
Okay, but I mean, then maybe it's a comment that people should not interpret this as like, look, it is close to superfluid. Mm-hmm. You don't expect it to be close to superfluid. It should be a factor of close to 2 for these interaction strengths.
Mm-hmm. There's not much we can say because by looking at density, this, I report what we see. Okay, we haven't done any further investigation. Okay, so this and all this by subtraction the two result if a error that could be enhanced. Yeah.
Do you have any more questions?
So in the last part, you discussed this fluctuation dissipation theorem,
yes.
and you introduced the quantity Z.
Yes.
So I roughly understood, in superfluid phase, you have more correlation, so Z becomes bigger than zero. But
right.
Is the value Z equals to 2 have special meaning? Like, is it upper bound for ideal yeah. superfluid or something yeah. like that?
Ever since I put that line, I regret it. Okay, it seems to suggest there's a new constant. Okay, all we put here just to show you the scale. Okay, that's a roughly around Z equal to 2. But it's possible it can deviate further if it can somehow go to even higher, go deeper into the superfluid regime. Okay, so all I can say is that this is our empirical way to rewrite the equation, and we just put in this line by hand, and it looks like it's for our parameter, it seems to approach 2.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well, if no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.
Right.
The last speaker of this afternoon session is Alexei Strubtsov.
Oh,
he will talk about non-equilibrium phenomena in attractive Bose-Einstein condensates.